people always share about how much money they made. They never talk about how much money they lose. Oh, if they can make so much money, and I'm looking at the market, I've been in the market for so many years, probably I'll know the market as well. And so you get into the market again.
Irene Zhao is back.
One of the most influential women in the crypto industry.
She's here to reveal her secret on pivoting her Instagram influence to joining the Twitter crypto space.
What do you think about the reputation that female influencers make money just for being pretty?
That's the assets they have, right? And it's really tough to remain pretty because you have to put in a lot of efforts. Because people are not dumb. If you keep using it, people will get bored anyways. If you know how to make the best value out of it, then you are smart.
You went down the meme coin rabbit hole recently. Why?
I was trying to find out on Twitter, got into one group chat, and they were talking about this troll. Elon Musk changed his Twitter profile to Chief Troll Officer. Some traders bought the token immediately, and now I think they made like $1 million.
What are some of the concrete experiences you've lived where you learned the most?
You should make your team very lean. Don't try to make 5-star teams. Oh, I want the best people from here. Just start as lean as possible and don't expand so quickly.
Why Chinese people are so into Bitcoin despite government banning Bitcoin so many times?
There's a lot of Bitcoin farmers from China, basically. They are trying to make more money from the gas fees on the Bitcoin ecosystem.
Do you think it's possible for an entrepreneur to be super successful in his or her first venture? Irene is back on the podcast, which is amazing. After an amazingly successful first episode where we had more than 11 million views across platform, which is fucking crazy, to be honest, for us. And it actually helped us understand what people like to see, right? Which is not necessarily talking about crypto.
At least
last year, because no one gave a fuck about crypto. Maybe this year is going to be a bit more, but depending
on the
platform.
But it has to be really, 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 really general knowledge about crypto.
Yeah. And
it cannot be anything specific because it's not going to appeal to the mass audience. They don't understand anything.
It really depends on the platform, actually. And we realize TikTok, Instagram, YouTube Short.
Unless it's Twitter, then it's
exactly
different.
Exactly, Twitter. Yeah,
only
yeah.
Twitter people are interested in the details.
Absolutely. Which is why now we split the podcast between different parts. One is more like, obviously we want it to be interesting, but one is more what's more likely to go viral on all the platforms except Twitter.
Oh.
And then what's more likely to go viral on Twitter.
Mm.
But yeah, maybe for people who've been living under a rock, who are you? Just a short description for people who maybe didn't see the other episode and who don't know you.
I haven't done introduction for a long time. Okay. Hello, everyone. This is Irene. I'm the founder of Soko and Irene DAO. So I got into crypto earlier 2020 and I started to learn how NFT can really help creators to revolutionize the relationship between them and their fans. So I started a platform called Soko, which is a Web 2.5 social platform that helps all the creators to launch their own NFT collections at the click of a button.
When you say Web 2.5, what do you mean exactly?
Web 2.5 means it's like a bridge between Web 2 and Web 3. So NFT is Web 3, but we are helping Web 2 creators and a mass audience to create their own NFT. So we call it a Web 2.5 platform where we help the people from both Web 2 and Web 3 to do their own collections.
Mm. Mm. Because the main problem today is still user interface, right? Especially in crypto.
Yes.
Kind of like hard and like you need to find a way to bridge all the people who are familiar with when we talk about Web 2, like it's basically all the applications that we're using today.
Mm.
Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, etc. Mm. And then there's this new Web 3 world, which is kind of like probably intimidating for most people who don't
really
know.
It is still intimidating and it gets more intimidating.
Yeah, the more you go in there, the more it's intimidating.
Yes.
So I think we can continue what we were talking about before, which is the trading on
let's talk about
because this is a really interesting point, because actually one of the main way a lot of people start crypto is that, right?
By trading.
By thinking that they might be able in this, you know, they're like, oh, this crypto thing is very interesting and it can go up a lot or go down a lot. And then if it goes up a lot, but I don't necessarily have a lot of money to play with, but which, you know, like we all wish we had more money to start to make more money faster, right? Yeah. And then there is this thing called leverage trading, yes, where you can actually play or kind of invest, I mean, trade with money that you don't have by using leverage, right? Mm. So do you want to talk about that and kind of like your journey with it? Because you told me that it's one of the things that you really like to do right now.
Trading. I think that my trading journey is very short. It's only like less than 2 hours or like less than 2 months.
Okay.
But I almost experienced everything in the past 2 months. I make a lot of money, they go back to zero, they make money again, they over-leveraged and got liquidated, and then I put in more money as the margin and I lost everything again. And now I'm starting all over again, always in like 2 months. I feel like I experienced everything already, yeah.
Why are you still doing it?
Why am I still doing it?
Yeah.
I think it becomes like a habit. It's not really to make, I mean, of course.
A habit or?
Habit. I feel
like an addiction.
It's not addiction because I know exactly my goal is still to make money. So we don't call it addiction because for addiction, it's like gambling because you don't know whether you are going to make money or not. You just feel the thrill to trade. But for me, it's not really about the thrill. It's really about try to at least not losing money again. So I don't see it's addiction. I think it's still like a habit. I become more and more professional, of course, along the way because I start to look, read books about trading and how people lose everything and how people start over again and how you can actually have some strategy before trading. Like you have stop loss, everything. Before that, I don't have anything.
Can you go through the journey, 2 months, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in crypto is actually a lot. Like, I mean, a lot of things can happen, as you said.
Yes.
And what you learned, like, every step of the way, because I've been through the same journey, yeah, but at some point I stopped because I lost.
Really? You stopped? Okay.
The leverage trading, I thought.
What's the leverage you used?
So I was using 2 or 3x.
Only max. 2 or 3x?
Yeah,
only
yeah.
2 or 3.
My strategy was late 2019, my strategy was I had quite a good amount of Bitcoin, but I wanted more Bitcoin and I didn't have more cash. So I was like, I discovered BitMEX.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
The BitMEX
people,
days.
BitMEX is like, they trade coins with coins, right? It's like not USDT pairs,
exactly.
Coin compare.
Exactly. So basically I was like, I have this Bitcoin and I can use them as a collateral trade and make more Bitcoin.
Yes,
which for me was, if I make more Bitcoin and then the Bitcoin price goes up, it's like a double win.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you're like, oh, I found the holy grail, right?
Yeah.
And then before starting with real money, I knew that, you know, 90 or 95 or 99% of the people actually don't make money trading. So I was like, I need to understand how I'm not part of these 90 or 95 or 99. And so I spent probably 4 months trying to learn and doing some different things. I even bought a course and everything. Mm. And then at some point I thought I understood the trick, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I thought I was smarter than most people, which when you think you're smarter than most people, you're probably not smarter than most people. And so it was a bit crazy. So I started, my strategy was very simple. Bitcoin was 7K back then,
wow,
December 2019. My strategy was just long only, right?
Mm.
Compound. So basically I was leveraged 2 or 3X because I knew, if I'm leveraged 2X, Bitcoin price needs to go down 50% for me to be liquidated, which is almost impossible, right?
I thought, right?
And then I was also, I'm going to trade only with 10% of my Bitcoin. So in case it goes down too crazy, I can top up, add more margin, lower my liquidation
price. Sounds like a very safe plan.
Exactly. So I was like, man, I'm safe. And
yeah,
because I had quite a good amount of Bitcoin to play with, like even 10% would be like a significant amount. Then I thought, you know, you leverage yourself 2 or 3X.
Yeah.
And then every time Bitcoin goes up 3% or whatever, you close the position. So you're up 9 or 10%.
Okay.
You replay it and then you compound those gains. So instead of compounding interest over years, you compound gains over...
It sounds like a very safe plan.
And if you do the math, when you compound, you know, 3% at 3X, I don't know, 100 times you go from like 10K to like 2 mil or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, this makes so much sense, right? First month of December 2019, my goal was I was starting another company in data and we were paying ourselves, I was in Geneva, we were paying ourselves 6K Swiss franc a month. So I was like, my goal for the first month of trading is to match this. So I doubled my salary, right?
Yeah.
First month, I made 30K. realized mm-hmm. in Bitcoin. So I was like, oh man, 30K. And then
just
this is going to go up.
Bitcoin. You made four.
Exactly. Right? Then yeah. I was like, this is going to go up 10X. It's going to be 300K in the future. Mm-hmm. Wow, crazy. Suck. And then I discovered this was just trading Bitcoin. Then I started, I discovered this contract on BitMEX, the ETH.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, it's more volatile. Mm-hmm. So I can trade ETH instead, right?
Yeah.
With my Bitcoin as collateral and make more Bitcoin. First week after I did that, 80K realized profit.
Mm-hmm.
And then second week, 80K. So I started to go crazy. And then...
So it's 160K in total. 80K and 80K, right?
80 plus then 30. So 190 in Bitcoin, uh-huh. right? Mm. Back then. And Bitcoin maybe went... But it was pure luck. Bitcoin went from 7K to 10K.
Oh, and that, you still
and I was
have
just
Bitcoin.
Like leveraging longs. Closing, replaying.
Yeah.
And at some point, like, obviously the market started to kind of...
fluctuate a little bit.
It was stagnating and then COVID happened. And then there was the COVID crash.
Oh.
And I just basically lost everything.
How much does it crash for Bitcoin?
I mean, I was leveraged on ETH, which ETH probably went down 70% in a day.
70% in a day?
I think so, something like that.
Oh, and so you got liquidated.
Yeah, meanwhile, I had topped up most of my Bitcoin because like the price was stagnating, but there was something called funding fees.
Yeah,
I was
completely
eating my,
you know. The funding fees is so expensive.
So I got completely fucked and lost like 80% of my money, all my money, all my net worth in like that March crash.
You mean so, including the money you had, not the money you made?
I mean, everything included.
Oh,
80% gone. Poof. So then I learned trading on leverage is not for me. And I was never sleeping. It was fucking horrible. I was like, as you said, you're on the plane, you go crazy. It's 24/7, Mark. I couldn't sleep. So like, what's your experience? Because mine was disaster.
Yours is more, it's crazier. I don't want to talk about my own experience anymore. Yours is even crazier. But it's very extreme conditions that happen to you, right? Because I don't think under this market condition, it can crash like 50% or 70%.
What happened 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, but it's because I leverage on like 20x.
Okay,
so it's different because only a little bit change in the price, my portfolio will drop a lot.
Because for example, I don't agree with you because I thought the same. Oh, it's very extreme. But look, in 2021, Bitcoin went from 60k to 30k like within a few days or weeks mm-hmm. when there was the first crash, and then it went back up to like 69k. So there is these liquidation events every few months or maybe once or twice a year, which is made to liquidate everyone. And the problem is, for me, what I understood...
Yes, to liquidate the both the long and the short.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they suddenly decrease a lot to liquidate all the longs and suddenly increase a lot to liquidate the short, like probably within a week. They can liquidate both parties and only the exchange make money.
So for me, I understood at that day that trading on leverage seems like an illusion or you use these stop losses, right? But they don't always work, from what I understood. Like sometimes, like it just doesn't, if it goes down to...
Yeah, but stop loss is also very dangerous because suddenly it just drop a lot, but then it goes back again. So actually, if you have enough margin, you're probably not going to lose that amount of money. If you... Right, sometimes it bounces back.
So for me, the whole thing was a mind fuck. And I was like,
I
can't sleep anymore. I lost so much money. It's not made for me. And if you hold spot...
Yeah, you could have
and
made
much
more.
And you don't even trade
more,
in a bull market, you outperform everything.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what people said. After tried everything about trading, they said we should just buy spot.
Exactly.
That's
what happened to me.
Yeah, don't trade paper at all.
So that's why for me, it's really interesting to know why you're trading on leverage and all this stuff. Maybe you're still like in the journey of like...
I think you are right.
Realizing
probably I
that,
should close
right?
all my positions after this podcast. That's the biggest takeaway for this podcast. I should just close all my positions. And
just to be able to sleep and take a plane normally, right? To sleep at 9 and like be chill. Which
I think
chill.
Right now it's better, but when I just started, it's really hard to sleep because you know it's 24 hours, right? And when you just keep losing, you have to keep adding more money into the trading account. Otherwise, it's going to get liquidated. So I think that's really crazy.
It's pretty crazy. I completely agree with you. So overall...
And also, right, I think internet also plays a very important role in terms of your journey because people always share about how much money they made on internet. Right?
Absolutely.
The unrealized gains.
Absolutely.
And
they
that's
show
how,
only realized profit.
Yeah, they never talk about how much money they lose.
Yeah.
They only talk about how much money they made on trading. And then they think, oh, if they can make so much money and I'm looking at the markets every day and also I'm being this in the market for so many years. Probably I know the market as well. I can try to trade as well. And so you get into the market and get fucked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For me, what I realize is like the people who really make a lot of money trading on leverage are the people who basically got fucked so many times, lost everything so many times, and started to adjust their strategy and to more develop a sort of like gut feeling about the market rather than, you know, TA and like all these basically indicators that traders, most of them, they're saying they just use, I think, volume and price and gut feeling at some point. They're like, oh, I use this, and like I can kind of like know on average. And I try to know, if I lose, I try to lose to limit my losses. That's like the key.
Yeah, yes. I think there's many ways for people to make money, like different ways to make money. But the only way to keep the money is to have stop loss whenever you can. And also you have the strategy before you get into the market. You say, oh, how much money I'm going to lose today? If like once it exceeds the kind of amount, you just close everything and they just leave.
Which is, which for me, maybe it's because I hate losing and I just love winning. it was impossible. I was like, I can't go into something knowing, oh, I'm going to lose that much and accept that, you know, because the more you lose, you're like, it might just go back up.
Yes.
And then you lose more and more and more. And like cutting the loss is so painful. And
I know.
I mean, the
but
whole
if you
thing
made enough money in the beginning and you are just like making less money, right? If you think in that way, it's better. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was more like I'll invest. I'll kind of do these swing trades for 2 years. Like basically you buy, spot, you sell after 2 years.
Oh.
And then I'm just going to build things because my brain is not made for trading on leverage. Like it's just fucking
And if you're trading, you have to be like really full time, like 24 hours.
Exactly.
Even if you are out having fun with your friends, you are keep looking at the screens.
Yeah.
If it's going down or going up. I think it's really very like mind fucked.
That's a crazy one. I remember being at my sister's birthday. She was turning 30 and being crazy there or being with, you know, my girlfriend or my friends and never mentally present. Like
exactly.
That's the problem of trading.
Yeah.
And
you're never mentally present.
People think I'm going to trade for freedom because I don't like my 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
But actually it's consuming you 24/7 and it's destroying your mental health and you're not even present anymore, right?
It's true. Yeah. Not at all.
So
and anyway, if we are doing the podcast now, I'm still thinking about my position because I loaned it at like 4,300.
So now
it's like $1,000, like $1,000 done. So I'm thinking like if it's going up or going down while I'm doing this podcast with you.
So now you have open positions, right?
Yeah,
at this very moment.
Yes.
Horrible.
It's been like a few days. I started like a week ago when it was like high. Yeah.
Horrible.
So it's been like a week. How I even close my positions.
Yeah. I feel you.
And also I talked to a lot of people in Taiwan when I went to Taipei this time. I talked to a lot of traders. I talked to the people from exchange, blah, 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 blah. I thought I learned some strategies and then I'm going to reapply again, but still the same thing happens. So I'm trying to, it also is like competing with yourself, right? If this time I lose, I make money or like lose less money than the previous months, I improved. So to me, it's like a journey. It's like something, some skill I want to master.
What's the max that you risk? Like percentage of like all your crypto holdings or?
I don't know.
How do you limit?
1 or 2%. I only use 1% of the money I had to play with trading. So it's fine.
But if you lose 1%, then you add another percent. And then if you lose another percent, you add another percent. That became 3%.
Because I have Ethereum and the ETH price keeps going up.
Okay.
So
it's your hedge, basically.
The price of the spot actually covers the loss on in the future. So
beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. Amazing. Talking about crypto, there is another few things that you've been very interested by. So not only trading on leverage, but also meme coins.
Yes, meme coins.
You went down the meme coin rabbit hole recently. Why?
Because I was trying to find alpha on Twitter, but I realized Twitter is not actually where the original alpha is. The earliest alpha started with all these group chats from Telegram group chat, the WeChat group chat, where people start to talk about it. And then I just got into one group chat. I was looking at what people are talking about, and they were talking about this troll because Elon Musk changed his Twitter profile to Chief Troll Officer, T-R-O-L-L.
Okay.
And some traders bought the coin immediately.
Bought or created it? Bought it or created one because they're looking at, oh, what is Elon
Musk? The token was already there. But once Elon Musk changed his profile to chief troll officer, some traders bought the token immediately.
Yeah.
I think just a week ago. And now I think they made like $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a bit late. I bought at like a price, but I still like 5x.
You're late and you're up 500%.
Yeah, 500%.
I mean, 400 or 500%. Mm-hmm. 5x.
Yeah.
That's terrible, right?
I mean,
5x in one week.
I knew it.
My God.
I already knew it when Elon Musk changed, but I didn't bother to buy it.
You have to be very reactive.
I just only have 2 or 3 days. I'm like, okay, fine, just buy a little bit. Yeah.
So this one is called Troll.
Troll, yeah.
Troll meme coin.
T-R-O-L-L.
Is there another meme coin that you're interested in or that you played with?
Yeah, it's called Smiley. Smiley.
Smiley?
Smiley, yeah. It's also Elon Musk concept meme coin. Yeah, that one I went like 10x, 1,000%, yeah.
Okay.
That covers my loss in the future, so.
Did you manage to sell? Because the problem when things
I sold. I sold like 50%.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I know when people start talking about it on Twitter, it's time to sell.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
When it becomes,
otherwise, everything is going back to zero again.
Exactly. When people start to talk about it too much and it's probably a bit late, right? It's not the moment to jump in.
I think it's more important to know when to sell. It's more important than when to buy. Because if you don't sell anything, everything is going back to zero.
You talked about this meme also called that is doing crazy returns and a lot of people talking about it on Twitter. Dog with hat.
Oh, dog with hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's cat with hat. It's everything with hat. Yeah. I didn't buy. Yeah.
But what do you think about the dog with hat concept? And do you think it really has like a better potential than others? Just think some people are saying, hey, look, because there is a hat and you can add a hat everywhere. Like it's probably one of the best meme coins out there.
I don't know. I mean, for me, right? I just look at the concept because I'm not a Elon Musk fan, but I feel like Elon Musk really fits a lot of people in the crypto because everything related to him makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking at all the coins that associate themselves with Elon Musk. And then it makes me more focused because that's the kind of the meme coin concept I was looking at. So I don't really bother about like those coins on Ethereum, on like Solana, AV, AVAX, because it's going to distract me. So I only focus on
Elon and what he's talking about.
Okay. Elon, yeah.
Yeah, okay. There's another thing that you've been captivated by, which is BRC20 and BRC420.
I think too late for BRC20.
Can you explain what it is? Because even me, I missed the whole thing.
BRC20 is just NFTs on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's like ERC20, but it's BRC20 right now. So it's like everything, like Ethereum, now we move everything from Ethereum back to Bitcoin. It's like Ordinals. So it's like NFT attached on the Bitcoin ecosystem. And there's a lot of tokens, a lot of projects that are building on Bitcoin. I like Bitcoin layer 2 to help to make the Bitcoin ecosystem more secure and faster. It's like a whole new ecosystem. But I think right now it's mainly for the Chinese people, for Bitcoin. I think about like 50% of the Chinese people are into the Bitcoin ecosystem. But for the Western, like you, only like 10 to 20%. So I think it's still early.
Do you know why?
Because I think there's a lot of Bitcoin farmers. They are from China, basically. And they are trying to make more money from the gas fees on the Bitcoin ecosystem. That's why they are trying to talking about this concept right now. You know, those farming Bitcoins, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they try to make more money by people trading on the Bitcoin ecosystem. So they make more trading fees.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why it's the concept originated from China. And it's still like more like Chinese people are talking about it and play around with it.
Do you know how or why Chinese people are so into Bitcoin despite, you know, the government kind of banning Bitcoin so many times and even banning Bitcoin mining, I think it was 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Which it's actually the thing that
because
crashed
Bitcoin
the price.
Halving is happening very soon and there's a chance they are not able to make as much money as before. And therefore, they are trying to create all this Bitcoin ecosystem, the least narratives, so they can make more money before the Bitcoin halving happens.
Mm.
That's some of the explanation I heard from my friends. So they think the Ordinal is not going to be popular after the Bitcoin halving?
It won't.
It won't, yeah.
Why?
Because once Bitcoin halving is like, there's nothing more to really to promote. But if it's before that, people still want to talk about Bitcoin, the farming, everything, so they can make money from the trading fees when the system got really congested. But of course, the American people or the Western hate it, right? Because they just make the ecosystem even more congested.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Especially the true Bitcoiners who like always said that Bitcoin
yeah,
should
the true
not
Bitcoin,
have anything
yeah,
on
they
the
don't
top,
like
right?
it at all. Yes. But I think this is the like the new narratives right now and what's popular right now. And it's not really like, not people are looking at it. I mean, still like for the Western, they are not really looking at Ordinals, the Bitcoin ecosystem right now. So I think there is still potential. Yeah, though that's why what I'm working on or like what I'm focusing on right now, because I already missed the first hype, which is probably started in June last year when Audi was like, it's free mint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all free.
Yeah, it's free. Now it's like $70.
There's too many things happening and it's really impossible to
yeah,
just
so that's
catch
why
up.
I didn't really look at L2 like OP, Arbitrum. I don't really have time to look at that.
Impossible, huh?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Very difficult. You need to pick up a few things that you like.
Yes.
Probably more like that by interest and then like focus on that because it's impossible. There's too much innovation and
it happens so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything just happens within like 2 months.
Yeah.
Audi was like only like $10 2 months ago and now it's $70. So it just happened so fast within like the 2 months. Everything in crypto will just move too fast. And it's really hard to catch everything. Yeah. Mm.
We talked about, you said, hey, I learned about the money management with my business.
In a very hard way.
Do you want to tell us more about that? I would like to talk about business and the reality of entrepreneurship, which most people still don't understand. They think when you start a company, you know, it's like freedom. Like I'm financially not.
It's not at all.
Do you want to tell us about your, you know, you've been involved in your first big experience as an entrepreneur with Sokol? What are the key learnings from it?
You still have some sort of freedom because you don't need to work on a 9-to-6 job anymore. But what you give to exchange the freedom is something that it's like the mental, you're probably fucked like mentally every day, right?
Absolutely.
And you have people who are trying to get money from you every day when they know you actually raise so much money. And just like a lot of bad things can happen when you actually have money. You thought only good things happen, but actually a lot of bad things happen when you actually have the money. And it's very, very hard to keep.
More money, yeah. More problems.
So many problems. Like if the business is bigger, there's more problems too. Yeah.
What are some of the like concrete experiences you've lived where you learned the most regarding this money thing, your money management, business, people trying to take advantage? And where you would have acted differently had you known like how people are really and how greedy they are and how, yeah, not everyone has your values of like trying to do like the best out of the money you raise.
Mm-hmm. As I said, I think you should make your team very lean at the start. Don't try to make a like all-star, like five-star teams. Oh, I want the best people from here. You're not going to do anything even though you have the best people in the team because they cannot really contribute that much, even though they are together, right? So you should just start as lean as possible and don't expand so quickly. I think that's the most important lesson I learned.
So stay lean, have a big vision.
Use whatever resources you have at the start, even if you had a lot of money to spend on.
So you're saying even if you have a lot of money, you should still, it's very difficult, but you should still see how do I make the best of like simple resources?
Right, yes, exactly.
And not even this money, I should kind of like ignore it or like maybe invest a bit like wisely here and there, but think more, hey, look, I raised, let's say I raised 5 million and I know my entire costs for my current team for the year is 500K.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I can live. It's more having a mindset of, hey, now I can survive for 10 years without making money, mm-hmm. instead of saying, hey, let's get 10 times bigger directly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because if you can survive
it's,
in time...
I think it also depends on the market condition, because sometimes if it's bull market and you have to really develop really, really fast, otherwise the hype is just going to go away. I think that is fine to expand, but you have to really know the exact right time to expand at the right situation. Otherwise, the money just go away. And when Frentech really went popular, and a lot of advisors or like investors were like, why don't you just do a Frentech version, like a AK, like Frentech, and build into the so-called platform.
Yeah.
And of course, it takes at least like 2 weeks, right? And by the time, if I listen to his advice, by the time we build the product out, Frentech already died.
Yeah.
So that's the time where you need to choose whether you want to build these functions or not, whether you want to catch the hype or not.
It's basically learning how to control your FOMO, right? And the more you have means, the more you're like, if I can afford all this stuff, I can just FOMO in.
Yeah, because there's always a delay. Yes.
It's the same as buying a coin.
Yeah.
I have the money to buy the coin, but I'm FOMOing into this thing, but it's probably kind of too late. You have to have like this kind of trust, like gut feeling and instinct.
Probably bought at the top, right? When you got it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's really very hard.
How hard is it to build a business?
How hard. It's just a lot of, but I think it's hard, but the good thing is I learned a lot along the journey and I'm much more mentally tough right now compared to 2 years ago. You know, 2 years ago, when I started Irene DAO, there are so many people who are criticizing and they say I'm a man.
Why?
At the time.
Saying
because they find a photo of me on a block shop wearing like a costume. And they think I, like me, steal the photo from the blog shop to post it on my Twitter to farm engagement.
But it was a real photo of you?
Yeah, it's the blog shop who steal my photo on Instagram. But the people think I steal the photo from the blog shop to post on Twitter.
Okay.
Because they find this photo on the least foreign blog shop.
Okay.
So they think I'm a man who is stealing the blog shop's photo to post as a woman. And it's actually from a very big KOL. I still remember his name. It's called Genzi. Do you know Genzi?
Who Genzi,
is the,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, Genzi. Yeah, he's the one that started everything. He said, oh, Irene is a man, blah, blah, blah. All these guys who bought his NFT got scammed because he was a man. And literally I cried, you know, just because people think I'm a man. And actually when I talked to a very successful entrepreneur, like OG in the crypto space, I was like, and he saw me crying. He's like, why? He said, oh, because people think I'm a man. He was laughing. He said, I don't think you're ready to be an entrepreneur. You're so mentally weak.
Develop on that. This is so interesting.
But right now, I'm just like went through all these things for the past 2 years. People, blah, 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 blah.
That if people think you're a man or you are a monster, you would not care anymore, right? Because you develop your tolerance to stress and to
You stretch yourself
so much. Yeah, absolutely. For me, I mean, I've been building companies since I'm 23, and it's probably the way to become mature and grow as quickly as possible. Like. Like you have employees and then maybe you hire some people who have kids and a family to take care of, but then you need to fire them and all that stuff. I remember crying, I mean, multiple times. Once I was crying at 23 because I had to fire my first co-founder. Once I was crying because I had to fire this dude who had a family to take care of, right? But it was not even my fault that we had to fire him. We had gotten a big project that we needed more people on. We hired this dude and then after 3 or 4 months, we lose the big project because the person who hired us internally from this big company got fired. And so the whole political thing is fucked because he's not there anymore. So we're going to lose the project. And I'm like, fuck, I don't have the money anymore to pay this guy.
Yeah.
But like, I'm a horrible person. I just hired this person.
Yeah.
He has a family depending on me. And like, I have to tell him tomorrow that it's over, right? Mm. And so he's going to be in trouble because of me and the whole family and everything. And then you just spend your night, the night crying and feeling horrible. And then at the end of the day, I was just like, hey, man, like, I'll just pay you a plane ticket wherever you want because I'm sorry, right? And then, I mean, he ended up doing like really well anyway. But it's more like all these things that you think is like the end of the world, but actually it's not. It's just like one more shit, you know? Mm. And then at some point, the smaller shits that looked huge in the beginning, just like...
Yeah.
Don't care.
Yeah. And I got so mad when the first investor rejected the project. He didn't even reply, he just ghosted us. I was so mad when I got ghosted by the investors.
You
I was
mean like, an investor or a potential investor?
A potential investor.
So
yeah.
You basically learned that you should have zero ego towards customers, yeah. towards investors, towards people in general. Like the ego doesn't work in business because no one gives a fuck about you. That's completely true.
Yeah. So I'm like I'm shameless now. Like no matter what you say, I'm like, okay.
Don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
Unbothered. In my lane, focused, moisturized. Absolutely.
But it's true. I mean, if you think about, if you everybody think about something and you have to take it to like take it personally, there's no way you keep growing or you can develop yourself, right? Because you are just like mentally fucked by so many different voices, so many criticisms, whatever people can say about you.
Probably even more when you're a woman and you look good.
Yeah, I don't care anymore.
Don't you think so? Like people attack you much more. You know, there is, I mean, what do you think about the reputation, which is not really a reputation, that female influencers make money just for being pretty?
I mean, that's the assets they have, right? That's one of the assets I had. And I said, it's really tough to remain pretty because you have to put in a lot of efforts to look good, to even look good. So I think if you have the assets and you know how to use it strategically, because people are not dumb. If you keep using it, reuse it, people will get bored anyways, right?
Yeah.
You eventually lost that advantage. But if you know how to use it like carefully, you know how to make the best value out of it, then you are smart. People will also think you are smart.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You went to at the first, they think, this woman just used his like her face to blah, blah, blah. But once you do it bigger and bigger, people think, oh, actually, she's great. She's smart. So people change the perception when you are being successful. They help you justify what you have been doing in the past.
Is pretty privilege real? The pretty privilege. And so how much being pretty is helpful, especially, let's say, in business? Or is it actually complicated, right? Or makes things more difficult?
I think being pretty is easier to approach people. Like you can approach people like easier than most other people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But after that, how are you going to develop the superficial relationship into something more concrete? Then it's your strengths and your communication skills or what you can offer besides all this superficial stuff. Yeah.
How difficult do you think, I mean, from your experience, like how difficult was it to say like, hey, look, I'm just not just a pretty face, but I'm actually able to do more. Now we are talking, right? Now I'm there. But like, hey, look, I'm like building this business. I'm doing this thing like versus the person who is just there. And often like you're dealing with men, right? And with men with a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And men with a lot of money, they have this tendency to probably infer that the pretty woman is just a pretty woman. Right? And that they're always going to be above, right? Especially in business.
You see, it doesn't matter as long as I get what I want. It doesn't matter how they think of me, right?
Yeah.
Because if you be with someone who are superior or like they have more resources than you, as long as you get what you want, it doesn't matter how he thinks of you.
True.
I get what I want. So, and as long as the relationship can like continue and the things that you gave me, I can make it into something bigger or like better. Of course, you would want to give me more resources, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you think it's possible for an entrepreneur to be super successful in his or her first venture?
I don't think so. I think it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had many examples here of like mega successful people, but most of them, they've built 3-4 companies before.
Have you met any successful entrepreneurs that succeed in the first time? You talk to so many entrepreneurs.
So, I mean, you mean like first business venture?
Yeah.
Damn, I don't think so.
I was
thinking about Alex Vanevic, who is actually coming tomorrow again on the podcast. But even him, I think he had a consulting company at some point. And then he worked for a crypto company that went bankrupt. I mean, he was not the founder.
Okay.
But I would think like it might have had a consulting company with some friends like much earlier, mm-hmm. which would be counting as the first, but like the Nansen is a mega success. Mm. Someone who started directly and had massive success.
Luca, the founder of Peggy Penguin.
He probably tried a lot of projects before.
So I think failure is normal. We should normalize failures, or should normalize project founders who rocked before.
If you think about it, like finding, most people think, oh, this building a business is having an amazing idea and then executing perfect, and therefore you need to be like the smartest person because you need to identify and then execute. I think it's more, entrepreneurship is more, you try something that makes sense to you, and then it's very unlikely that it actually makes sense to a lot of other people. And then you just don't stop and you pivot or you change or you do something mm-hmm. slightly different mm-hmm. or you do something completely different. Mm-hmm. And if you try forever, because you never stop, you basically never, you're never actually failing. Mm-hmm. And then one day, if you, the other day we had Eddie Travia, he was just saying that. He was saying, if you're willing to sacrifice everything mm-hmm. and you're patient, mm-hmm. it's probably closer to 10 years than to 1 year, and you just sacrifice everything and you work and try to solve problem for 10 years, it's very unlikely mm-hmm. that at some point you're not going to find something where you're really successful. Mm-hmm. But often it takes much longer than
you have to keep pivoting. And you suddenly catch the hype. But for me, I think my first one is successful. But the bad thing with being successful the first time is that you can't make it long lasting. It's like a one-off event. You cannot keep replicating the success because we are not fast enough to catch the
capitalize.
Trend.
Capitalize on the...
Because you have no experience.
Absolutely.
It happens too fast.
Absolutely.
You're mind-blowing.
And then there's another thing, which is a successful entrepreneur mentality will change with time. The more you're successful, the more you get probably known publicly. And the more you get big and successful, the more you're afraid of failure, right? And become risk averse because you don't want to fail publicly. And it happens to a lot of like really big entrepreneurs. They're like, I lose my appetite for risk because I don't want to fail publicly because I would be ashamed, right? Because if I was successful early on, it means people will think I'm really special. And then they start to know me. And then they're kind of like probably going to make fun of me. And there is this mega ego problem of entrepreneur, because the more you're successful, the more probably you build an ego, and the less you want to fail at what you do.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I think it's normal.
Probably normal.
And why would they still want to be entrepreneur, right? It takes so much mental strength to start a new business again. You probably want to be a VC investor or be an angel investor to advise on other people. It's like much safer. And you should to be honest, all these successful entrepreneurs just give the chance to the young people to experiment and to make their own business instead of just doing a new business. Mm-hmm. Unless you really enjoy building new stuff. Otherwise, but if you like Elon Musk, he built the very successful project and he keep building again. And then he bought Twitter and trying to do again. I think for him, this is the kind of achievement. He had a sense of achievement where he built something new.
Yeah.
But for most other people, they think ego is more important. People just have like different pursuits in the life.
Absolutely. What's your biggest prediction for the next 12 months?
For crypto anything? Market?
Let's do a crypto one and a non-crypto one.
For crypto one, I think... Probably BTC and Ethereum are going to, I think probably can go back to like 50K. Oh, it's already above 50K, like 60K and $4,000. Yeah.
Previous all-time high?
Probably. I think so. Yeah. I think the Bitcoin ecosystem is going to be more thriving.
Okay. So there's going to be more, there's more narrative with all these L2s and these ordinals and mm-hmm, everything. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. You think it's going to become something that's less boring? Because it's been seen as a very boring asset, right? You just hold it and you do nothing with it. There's no real narrative. I mean, now there is, but before there was no real narrative that was like kind of exciting. Why should I invest in that? Okay, it's digital gold or it's going up in time. It's safe. It's Whereas Ethereum or Solana, all these others, like, oh, there is all these things being built on the top.
But I think the Ethereum narratives are dying off. There's nothing much new coming up recently. So unless people can find something that is new and more exciting, otherwise, I think Bitcoin is still going to be the main role in the main role. Yeah. In the next 12 months.
What about non-crypto stuff?
Non-crypto stuff, I'm not really sure. Yeah, because for AI, I'm not really like a huge fan of AI. And also if you want to talk about the economy from both US and China, I think I don't have much to predict in the next 12 months. Yeah.
What's your key message for today's podcast?
I should close all my positions right now.
That's actually a really good one. And probably, I hope you do it.
Buy Bitcoin when it drops to 40K, drops to below 40K, and buy some Bitcoin.
Just you think like it's a good spot to buy Bitcoin under 40K?
Yes, under 40K, yeah.
If it goes there.
Yeah. I hope it won't because I'm loaning it.
Because you're leveraged.
Yeah. but if it ever goes to below 40K, I'm going to buy some spot.
Amazing. Thank you so much for doing this. That was amazing.